You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sweden in Focus, the Local's weekly news podcast. And we're recording this episode on Thursday, the 11th of August. This week, we're going to have a quick chat about how the Sweden Democrats' reckoning with their own history went off the rails a bit. We'll look at a moderate party proposal for the state to help people pay their spiralling energy bills. We'll discuss opposition to language tests for citizenship from a government agency. And finally, we'll turn the spotlight on the election pledges that will most affect foreigners. And we'll focus mostly on things like work permits, residency permits and citizenship. I'm Paul O'Mahony, and with me this week in Stockholm, I have the Local's James Savage. And in Malmö, we have Richard Orange and Becky Waterton. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
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 And we have a dog with us in the studio. Yeah, you can hear her now. We have a dog with us in the studio in Malmö. So if you hear any little whining noises throughout the podcast, it's not me and Richard.
Whose dog is it?
It's Richard's dog.
Oh,
Becky, you've had a hectic week, I know, on the housing market. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I mean, you know all the advice about not buying a property when there's like property market crash and all of this interest rate stuff. Yeah, I would recommend not doing that because it's been very stressful. We've been... applying for mortgages at the moment. We've been going through all the looking at the information of the BRF and making sure they're not in any kind of financial difficulties. I mean, we've got a mortgage now, luckily, so everything's fine. But weirdly, we applied to Danske Bank, who rejected our mortgage application because I don't have a permanent residence permit, which doesn't say anywhere on their website that that's a requirement. They'd given us a loan promise.
Yeah.
So luckily I'd applied to a couple of different banks and we got two loan promises from other banks anyway. But yeah, it was odd. And then I kind of tweeted out about it and there were a lot of people saying they'd had the same issue. They didn't specifically say Danske Bank, but a lot of people were saying that they'd also had issues with permanent residence permits and that they'd ended up being able to get a mortgage via SBAB, I think was one of them. And someone said SEB gave them a mortgage. So yeah, it's definitely something to keep in mind if you're planning on buying a property. Definitely apply to multiple banks just in case for some reason you need to have a permanent residency permit. Or there can also be rules about... So our BRF, we bought the apartment in. It was rental apartments, then it became a BRF, so like a cooperative housing association, at the end of August last year. And obviously some banks have a rule about not loaning out a mortgage for... a BRF which is less than a year old because they don't know how the financials are. So that's another thing. Like, one bank rejected us because of that. One bank rejected us because of permanent residency permits. Another bank rejected us because I can't remember what it was, but there was some kind of document that they didn't think was good enough. Like, there's loads of different reasons why they reject you, and it's kind of throwing all of your eggs into lots of different baskets and hoping that... it's a bit of a weird metaphor maybe, but
well, still glad to hear that it's getting sorted. How about James and Richard, have you had any troubles buying properties?
Never, but I came here as an EU citizen, so the need for a permanent residency wasn't there. I wasn't a permanent resident, but I was an EU citizen living in Sweden, so I think that probably made a big difference, whereas Becky is now a non-EU citizen and not a permanent resident, and that is, you know, that's quite different.
How about you, Richard?
I've never had much difficulty. I mean, I've only bought one property, and that was in 10 years ago, and it went pretty smoothly. But again, like James, I was an EU citizen at the time and married to a Swede. And also, I mean, I imagine that they apply the rules a bit more rigorously at the moment because they're worried about what's going to happen in the next few years. I imagine they're sitting there going, well, do we want to be giving out loads of mortgages now when there might be some sort of crash?
Okay, well, best of luck with the rest of the process, Becky. And before we move on, I should mention that we have a new Twitter account where you can follow everything that's happening with the podcast, and you can find us there under the name Sweden in Focus. The first news story we're going to talk about this week concerns the Sweden Democrats. They are a party with roots in the extreme right Bevara Sverige Svenskt, or Keep Sweden Swedish movement, and they've often been accused of not doing enough to acknowledge their historical ties to neo-Nazis and fascists. But they did finally publish the first part of a report last month that set out to grapple with these thorny issues. What was in the report, James, and why is it back in the news?
Well, the whole purpose of this report, like you say, was to try and get all the skeletons out of the cupboard, effectively. As you say, the Sweden Democrats, they have their roots in this Bevara Sverige Svenskt movement, which was a sort of neo-Nazi movement. They also were founded, you know, some of their founding members were on very much the wrong side of history in the Second World War, you know, including people who served as volunteers in the Waffen-SS. I mean, we're talking kind of quite
proper
serious,
Nazis.
Proper Nazis. But this issue has haunted the Sweden Democrats for many, many years in a way that it hasn't done with similar populist parties. Parties that on the face of it are very similar to the Sweden Democrats in, say, Denmark and Norway, very similar policies to them. You know, Fremskrittspartiet in Norway, for example, very similar policies, but not laden down by this historical baggage. And so the idea that Jimmy Åkesson, the party leader, had in 2018 was to say, look, we're going to try and find someone to write a report to put all the cards on the table. It was quite hard to find someone. And eventually they found a historian, an academic historian called Tony Gustafsson, who had researched at Uppsala University, and he wrote a report. And this report was fairly transparent, I would say. You know, it was it talks about how the party had been founded by fascists, skinheads, and other people with nasty backgrounds. I mean, that's pretty true, incontrovertible. But you know, this was the Sweden Democrats putting out there, and they figured that this was, you know, nice and transparent. But they were also able to use it, and the party secretary Martin Kunnan used it to say that the report also showed that the party was not itself part of the fascist extreme right.
Right.
That it was kind of a breakaway from that background. So they tried to spin it in that way. And they wanted this to be a sort of a really credible report that sort of put these questions to bed a bit. Unfortunately, it turned out this week that Tony Gustafsson himself had been a member of the Sweden Democrats. He joined Sweden Democrats in 2017 as a party member, which obviously opponents of the Sweden Democrats then can use against the Sweden Democrats to say, well, this report itself was not credible. That, you know, you say you're putting the cards on the table, you wanted an independent historian, the historian you got was not independent. So this is a problem for the Sweden Democrats in the sense that, you know, if this report was going to be useful, it needed to be credible, and now perhaps it's lost a little bit of its credibility. What the party is saying, though, is that, look, we don't look into people's backgrounds, GDPR and all that, you know. We can't tell whether he was once a member of the party. And Martin Kinnunen reiterated that the report was independent. Ultimately, it probably doesn't matter that much for the Sweden Democrats and their opinion ratings and what people will vote.
But its legitimacy has really been questioned now in
the report's
media.
Legitimacy itself has certainly been questioned.
It's been taken down from their website now, hasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of them trying to just, okay, let's just get rid of this. Let's just not talk about this anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously not going to be something they're going to be talking about very much in the future. So when these issues come up, they're not going to be able in the same way to wave this report around and say, well, look, we've gone to the bottom of all of these questions about us and we've taken our skeletons out of the closet.
But does it really mean that the skeletons are still in the closet? Because now people are just going to be able to say, you didn't do a proper report. You had this guy who was a Sweden Democrat write the report. It's not legitimate.
I wonder. I mean, the skeletons were never, in a sense, really in the closet, because all of this information has been publicly available anyway. So it makes it a bit harder for the Sweden Democrats to say that they have sort of done any sort of truth and reconciliation, for want of a better term. This makes that harder. But fundamentally, the origins of the Sweden Democrats are well documented by independent historians other than Tony Gustafsson. And I think people who want to use SD's background against them will continue to do so. And it'll be hard for Sweden Democrats to say anything about it, apart from, look, it's ancient history.
Okay. Just a reminder that if you're a paying member of The Local, we have a weekly newsletter called Sweden Elects that's produced by editor Emma Lovgren and focuses on the upcoming election. And you can sign up now at thelocal.se/newsletters. And obviously now is a very good time to do so with just a few weeks left until the election. Now, there's a lot of concern in Sweden and elsewhere elsewhere at the moment about rising energy costs, and with the election coming up, parties are eager to let consumers know how they plan to cushion the blow. With experts warning that electricity prices in southern Sweden will double this winter, the Moderate Party has said that the state should help households shoulder the burden. Can you tell us about this proposal, Becky, and how other parties have reacted to it?
Yeah, so anyone who's been to the dentist in Sweden, I know this might sound like a little bit of a weird kind of tangent, will understand this concept of högkostnadsskydd, just like high price protection. It basically means that you pay up to a certain amount, and then on the top of that amount, the state pays. So the moderates want to introduce this, but for electricity. Their proposal was that everything over 1 krona per kilowatt hour, the state could maybe pay 75% on that. And I think I was looking at TT, which one of the Swedish newswires, they said that that would kind of, that would mean that for a family in Norrland, which has cheaper electricity than here in Skåne, that would be about 6,000 krona saving. So it's quite a bit of money. And I mean, if that's just in Norrland, it would be quite a lot more in Skåne.
Yeah. So I've seen figures being thrown around, like homeowners in southern Sweden, in an extreme scenario, their bills could go up from like 20,000 to 70,000. So that would mean that like the state would cover maybe like 75% of the 50,000 discrepancy.
And they're saying that like this is because the government hasn't been controlling the electricity market and all of this stuff. That's kind of the reasoning behind it. But the interesting thing is that Magdalena Andersson kind of came out and said a statement saying we're open to discussing this. So I don't know. Obviously, it would look great for the government if they can kind of tackle these electricity prices that's what everyone's worrying about. A lot of people down here. Also, going back to me buying out an apartment, I was looking very closely at the energy rating. Can I afford if the electricity rating goes up so much? Like, it is a big issue. A lot of the different parties had mentioned energy prices specifically, and energy production, energy supply as being a big issue. So it'd be interesting to see what happens and see if this actually ends up coming to fruition.
So I wonder if Magdalena Andersson has kind of neutralised what could, on the face of it, have been a vote winner for the moderates.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's why she came out so quickly to say, oh yeah, no, we're open to doing this. But then she also said, like, as a caveat, we can't just pay for everything, single thing that gets more expensive because of the war in Ukraine. So it was a little bit like, we might do this, but don't expect us to be giving you loads of handouts just because things are getting more expensive.
And then on the sidelines, Mikael Damberg, the finance minister, was yesterday out and interviewed about the latest prognosis from the Sweden's government economic forecaster. The message from this is it's really important that we don't just start throwing money around left, right and centre at anything, you know, and that we hold discipline in the rest of the election campaign, which I think was a sort of tacit message to the moderates on this, as sort of a way of saying, you know, because this is, I mean, like you say, it's paying a three quarters of two thirds of everyone's electricity bill for the entire winter. It's going to be a colossal cost.
Exactly.
I mean, it's extraordinary. In a way, it's a quite an irresponsible, fiscally irresponsible piece of politics.
That wasn't even the only thing they proposed. They also proposed, so there's currently a discount if you want to buy solar panels or like more energy efficient heating sources for your home. So they were talking about extending that so it's even cheaper to make your home more energy efficient. So they're not just proposing throwing money at energy bills, they're also proposing throwing money at energy efficiency, which in itself is a good policy, but how are you going to finance it?
On the other hand, though, if everybody's hitting the ceiling, which basically everybody presumably will be because of the extent to which they're subsidising it, it reduces the incentive for people to economise on to increase energy efficiency at home. So there are significant problems with this. Ultimately, the problem is there is an energy shortage. Fuel prices are high. There's not enough energy in the European grid as a whole. It's not just the Swedish grid, it's the European grid. And what needs to happen in order for that to be resolved is, first of all, for there to be more power produced, preferably. That's hard to organise quickly. Secondly, for there to be less energy used and for people to use energy more thoughtfully and more efficiently. And, you know, what the government is doing here will make that harder, and therefore, some critics say, in fact many critics and many experts say, will increase the risk of there being blackouts or other kinds of electricity rationing during the winter. So it's, if you take the price mechanism out of it, and you can understand why they're doing this, because the amounts we're talking about would be massively disruptive for people, very, very hard for people to afford, and put some people into destitution. So absolutely understandable why they're doing it, but it creates problems at the other end, because in the end, it's going to be hard to keep the lights on for everyone the whole time, or for factories to keep operating and for them to have sufficient energy to keep doing that. So, you know, it's not without its problems.
Last week, we spoke quite a bit about the government's plans to introduce language tests for citizenship and residency permits. And one of the things we touched on is that the process of introducing language tests for citizenship in particular has been very slow. And I know you've followed up on that story this week, Richard. Can you tell us a bit about what you've found out?
Yeah, I mean, what happened was, is when, after they announced this policy in June, we had a lot of questions. So why are you bringing in tests for permanent residency? And are these superseding the idea of language tests for citizenship, or is it something in addition? And it was very unclear from what they said in the announcement. So we sent off emails to lots of people who were involved in the initial inquiry into language tests for citizenship. And, you know, one of the people who got back to us was Sofia Tingsell, who's acting head of the Language Council of Sweden, who was involved in that inquiry back in, I think it was 2019, 2020. And she thought that what had happened was that when they came out with these proposals to set up a whole new set of language tests for citizenship, the university said, who was supposed to carry out the test, said, we're not willing to do this. The National Agencies for Education, who was supposed to produce them, said they didn't have the competence to do that. And her own agency said it was clashed with the Sweden's language law and would be counterproductive. So there was this massive pushback from all of the agencies who would be forced to enact this. And sometimes the government just, I mean, it's the same as any reforms, especially often in education, actually. You know, you always get this pushback from the vested interests who don't want to change what their policies or their approach. But this time it seems like the government thought this is going to be too difficult and has basically put it on the back burner, because after 2 years, they still haven't sent the proposal onto the next stage, which is to go to the Swedish Council of Legislation, which then prepares the law and makes sure that it fits with other laws and, you know, that it works as a law. And so I still don't know if it is on the back burner or not. So we need to, it's something I really want to look into in the next few weeks and try and get some kind of answer from the Justice Ministry, I think would be responsible. You know, where are you going on this? Is this actually going to happen, or is this something that isn't actually actuelt, as they say?
Is it just going to die a quiet death?
Is it just going to die a quiet death? And are you going to instead test people at the permanent residency stage?
Why was the Language Council of Sweden so opposed to it?
Her main argument is that her council, it surveys a lot of the research on language learning, immigration, languages, how they work in society. So she argued that a lot of the research and past experience indicates that people aren't failing to learn Swedish because they don't want to. It's because there's some obstacle for them to doing it. You know, they're illiterate, or they're traumatized, or they don't have the right educational background, which makes it actually quite difficult to reach this level of Swedish that's proposed. And so they fear that it would become a discriminatory tool that would block people from being able to become Swedish citizens based on things they really have no control over, you know, whether they went to school when they were kids and sorts of things like that. And she also pointed out that it's a bit of a strange way to approach a problem with languages. And she used the example of maths. She said, you know, if Sweden is worried that kids don't have good enough maths and that's a block to the Swedish economy in the future, you don't sit there and go, you all have to pass this math test or else. You invest in math teachers. They argued that a much better way of dealing with this problem is to improve the Swedish for immigrants teaching in Sweden and make it more accessible. So a lot of people who've come to Sweden, they need to get working as quickly as possible, and society wants them to do that. But that clashes with the ability to learn a language. You can't sit in SFE for 6 years and be working as a, you know, delivery driver or something like that. You can't do both. And so to make SFE more accessible, I suppose, would be to have more evening classes, to make it sort of shorter at more convenient times of the day, maybe do more kind of online ways of doing it, more podcasts, you know, be a bit more inventive. I mean, nowadays SFE is very much like someone standing in front of a classroom of 50 people, and it could easily be done in a more innovative way. So she says there's a lot of things to be done that don't involve putting this kind of pretty brutal demand on people, because, you know, it's not like like passing an exam or getting a university degree. If you don't get citizenship, you might have to move to a different country. It might completely change your life. It's a pretty high stakes to have the argument she was making is that language tests shouldn't become some kind of a symbolic thing that either means you're welcome or not welcome.
But what the proponents of language tests would then say is that, you know, if you look at it from an individual level, maybe that's true. But if you look at it from a societal level, that it helps create what they would call parallel societies, where you have one Swedish society where people can make networks across almost the whole of society, and then you have pockets of society where people, because of a lack of language ability, are unable to do that, and that creates all sorts of problems with social cohesion.
Johan Persson, the leader of the Liberal Party, he clearly thinks that it's key to social cohesion, and he's dropping the age limits considerably. He's been in the news this week for demanding that two-year-olds be able to speak Swedish. Well, what's he actually saying, Richard? Have you seen that story?
His argument is that children who don't speak any Swedish at home, a big problem for Swedish schools in segregated areas is that when a lot of kids are arriving in schools when they are six, seven, eight, is it seven or eight? I don't know, without speaking decent Swedish, and that's partly because their families don't send them to kindergarten and förskola. So his proposal is that when they have their normal test with the local primary centre, there's already, as part of that, a kind of language element. They check whether the two-year-old's language development is happening as it should, or the one-year-old is happening. And if they don't have Swedish, then it will become compulsory to go to kindergarten, to send the child to kindergarten. And that's a kind of, again, as so much in the Swedish debate at the moment, that's come from Denmark. Denmark has this rule that they have compulsory kindergarten in what do they call what used to be called ghetto areas and parallel society areas. And to be honest, I mean, in a way, it's a good way of ensuring that the next generation speaks Swedish, is that everyone goes to kindergarten.
What happens if the parents refuse to send their two-year-olds to preschool?
Well, that's one of the things that caused controversy yesterday, is that in the press conference, he said, well, if they don't, they might have to be taken into care. And then in an aside, he goes, which is the worst thing that can happen to a child, to be taken away from their parents. And so that's caused a sort of outrage on Twitter, that how can you be proposing something which you say yourself is not good for the kids.
Yeah.
And we'll be back with our main topic after this short break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The election countdown is well and truly on. It's less than a month now until voters go to the polls, and with immigration-related issues high on the agenda, we decided to take a closer look at what Sweden's parties are saying they'll do in the areas of immigration and integration if they form part of the next government. And we'll focus mostly on the kind of areas that affect most of our listeners, like work visas, residency permits and citizenship. If I could start with you, Becky, what are the Social Democrats saying in this area?
I've specifically looked at what's on their website and what they've said in speeches to do with the election. Like, I've not looked at kind of all of the policies they've ever done that could affect immigrants. This is specifically like things that they've said in kind of their election information. And I think the Social Democrats are kind of emblematic of the whole Swedish political system when it comes to immigrants. The migration section on their website is migration, asylum and refugee politics. So it's very much seeing every kind of immigrant as the same. There's not that much stuff that kind of covers work permit immigrants or people that have come to live with partners or people that have to, or EU immigrants that kind of, yeah, have it's easier for them to arrive in Sweden anyway. They do say that work permit integration should be tightened up, but they don't really go into detail on how they think that should happen.
Work permit immigration.
Work permit immigration. So, like, labour migrants. I mean, they've said in the past that that could be introducing arbetsmarknadsprövning. So this was the, you can only get a job if it's in a role where there's a national shortage. So, and they've also spoken about introducing a minimum salary. So that, it could be that they're referring to, but they don't specifically say that in their policies.
What about the moderate party?
Yeah, the moderate party, they do actually talk quite a lot about labour migration. But like a lot of parties in Sweden, when they talk about immigration, they're usually talking about asylum immigration. So they say one of their headlines in their immigration policy is we want to introduce a volume target for immigration to Sweden of 5,000 people. Then you look at the small print. It's asylum immigration, but they're not always absolutely clear about that when they speak. So if you hear this, they're not looking to introduce a volume target for migration full stop. They're looking to introduce a volume target for asylum immigration of 5,000 refugees a year. They say they want to protect highly qualified labour immigration, but they want to tackle what they say is cheating in the system through, for instance, cracking down on people bringing relatives as personal assistants or carers, which they see as a problem. They want to raise the minimum wage for labour migrants to 27,540 kroner a month. But on the flip side of this, that's a relatively high salary. I think the Christian Democrats are proposing a bit more than that. But on the other side of that, they've said previously, and what I understand still to be their policy, although it's not expressed in their election material, is that they are opposed to this arbetsmarknadsprövning, i.e. they don't want civil servants to be deciding which jobs need to be filled. They want to leave that up to employers to decide which people they need to bring in. But with a minimum salary of 27,540, that is going to mean that the number of jobs in practice is going to be, the kind of jobs that are filled is going to be restricted. They also want, on the integration side, they want language requirements, as we were just talking about, language requirements for permanent residency and citizenship. So generally, you know, tightening up on quite a few things. But in that particular area of not having the arbetsmarknadsprövning, not having the labour market test.
It's a big issue for a lot of our listeners.
Which is a big issue for a lot of our listeners. In that sense, the moderates will actually be somewhat more liberal, as long as you're paid more than 27,540 kroner a month.
Richard, what about the Sweden Democrats, the third biggest party in the polls?
Well, not surprisingly, they're quite negative to immigration, given that that's their sort of raison d'etre, more or less, as a party. So they say that mass migration to Sweden from illegal immigrants, economic migrants and asylum seekers has changed Sweden for the worse. So they start straight off saying migration has been bad for Sweden. Mm. So that's their starting point and caused many social problems that we now need to fix. So they want to stop all refugees at all from countries which are not close to us. So I think Ukrainians would be okay. But outside of Europe, it's a no-no, and they want to tighten migration policy to the strictest possible level under EU law. When it comes to labour migration, unlike the moderates, they do support the return of arbetsmarknadsprövning, which is what the Social Democrats want to do, which is bringing back the old system where the unions and civil servants sort of work together to decide where there's a need for labour in Sweden. And it's only possible to get work permits if you have one of these jobs or one of these roles. So they do support that. And they want it to be kind of, if anything, tougher than it was before. When it comes to integration and citizenship, they want, you know, obviously all of the things that have been floated. They want language tests, they want citizenship tests, they want you to be able to prove that you've supported yourself for the long period that you've already been in Sweden. They want to make it so that immigrants can't get benefits unless they've earned money. So they need to, you need to earn money and pay into the tax system before you can take anything out. And they've got all sorts of rules for deporting people. So they want to deport people who commit crimes, even if they've got permanent residency, but also if they are antisocial or in some way hurt our society. So, I mean, you know, you could get deported for just about anything. And if you haven't managed to get a job, if you're unemployed, you could end up being deported. So it's interesting to see how, if the moderates do take power with the backing of the Sweden Democrats, how they will deal with questions like labour market tests. Will they be able to keep that liberal system, or will they be forced to do something that, like what the Social Democrats are proposing.
When we were talking before the podcast, you had an interesting point about these election pledges and how meaningful they actually are. And it was something that I think Magdalena Andersson had touched on.
Yeah, I mean, she was asked in her interview with pre-election interview with Swedish Radio whether the idea of election pledges, you know, was outdated. She was hit with a whole load of election pledges they had before last election that they ditched as soon as they did this deal with the Centre Party and the Liberal Party. Yeah. And she said, well, you know, I think people understand that in the current parliamentary situation, no one's going to get a majority. And what you can do is always going to depend on the negotiations you have after the election. So she was asked, you know, do you think that it rather than election pledges, we should have sort of goals or sort of intentions? And she said, yeah, if I'm honest, that's what I think. Yeah,
so in the example of the Social Democrats, if they form a government, it will be with the support of the Left Party, the Centre Party and the Green Party. And the left and the centre are as far apart from each other on fiscal policy as it's possible to be in Swedish politics. So there's serious horse trading that will need to be done.
And on this issue, on things like the labour market tests, I mean, Centre Party is very, very opposed to that.
Yeah, if we move on now to Centre Party, Becky, you've had a look at their policies.
Yeah, so the Centre Party kind of, I guess their big argument for why you should vote for them is if you're right wing, so if you're borgerlig, but you don't like the Sweden Democrats. They're kind of the only party in that bloc who has said that they're not going to work with the Sweden Democrats, which also puts them over in the left-wing bloc. But, you know, if you're liberal, but you don't like the Sweden Democrats, then that's kind of their argument for voting for them. They accuse the Sweden Democrats of being a xenophobic party with authoritarian leaders as its role models. So they're really... A lot of the Annie Love's summer speech, so that all of the party leaders have this kind of summer speech before everything kind of kicks off. A lot of her speech was talking about that the Centre Party believes that everyone is equal. She says that Sweden is a mosaic of people with different backgrounds, lives and dreams. And then she kind of links that to a mosaic of people that want things to work. And then she goes into kind of, this is our thoughts on healthcare queues and this and this and this. But she's kind of she doesn't really say anything specifically immigrant policies in her speech or in the highlighted on the website, but she definitely makes a point of saying, like, we're not anti-immigrant, we're not working with the Sweden Democrats, we're not on their side, which kind of implicitly is saying that we're pro-immigrant.
And where does her party stand on work permits?
The centre want everything to be how it is now. They've said that kind of the work permit law that we have at the moment is what they want to protect. That's what they. That's how they think it should be. So they don't want to have arbetsmarknadsprövning or this kind of lower salary cap or anything. They want everything to stay the same.
So this is a law that was brought in by the four-party alliance government, of which the centre party was one member.
And they did this together with the Green Party, Miljöpartiet. So it was those five parties at that point stood behind the Labour Migration Act.
Yeah, and several of those are now... Yeah, moving in a more restrictive direction.
Very much so.
Okay, and how about the Left Party?
Well, the Left Party, one of their major concerns with labour migration is that it allows people to get exploited, that people come here for low-paid work and are then exploited by unscrupulous employers in Sweden. So they want to crack down on that. They're in favour of this arbetsmarknadsprövning, this labour market test. They also want to make it possible for people who report their employers for a bad work environment to be able to do so without fear of being deported.
Great. And what about the Christian Democrats, Richard?
Well, when it comes to work permits, they have the highest salary threshold. They want you to have a salary of 35,000 kronor in order to be able to get a work permit to come to Sweden, which limits it to pretty high-end labour migration. So that's, you know, executives and computer programmers and scientists and things like that. Migration isn't really the focus of their campaign. The focus of their campaign is very much on healthcare and crime. But they want to go, they want to take power with the backing of the Sweden Democrats, and they are, you know, okay with sort of quite tough policies on migration. They're quite liberal, strangely, because they're a party that's all about the family. They tend to be quite liberal when it comes to migration on things like family reunification. So they're not opposed to people who come to Sweden being able to bring their families with them, because they're a party that's all about the family.
I think what's so interesting about this is the likely alliances, the likely coalitions make it if this is one of your issues, and this is the same for so many issues in this election, if labour migration is your issue and you're interested in this and you have a vote and you want it to be more liberal, for example, or you want it to stay as it is, it's really hard to know who to vote for, because the fact is, you know, if you want a liberal labour migration policy, you could vote for Centre Partiet. But on the other hand, they'll probably support a government led by the Social Democrats and also supported by the Left Party, both of which are in favour of Arbetsmarknadsprövning. On the other hand, you could vote for the moderates who are against Arbetsmarknadsprövning, but are but for this higher salary limit. But if that's okay by you, you could vote for them. But on the other hand, they are also going to need the support of the Sweden Democrats, who want the Arbetsmarknadsprövning. So you've kind of got to do a little analysis and think and try and figure out who might win that battle after the election and what the actual result might be. And I don't know, I've been following Swedish politics for 20 years and I've no idea.
There are a couple of parties we haven't looked at yet, one of which is very active on integration. That's the Liberals, Becky.
Yeah, so for the Liberals, integration is a key policy on their website. They're kind of focusing on migrants that are refugees, saying that it's all about new Swedes ending up in utsatta områden or suburbs, like old miljonprogram areas. So yeah, although they speak a lot about integration and migration, it's not really stuff that's going to affect people that are here on a work permit or people that are here on like a sambo visa, like a visa because you've moved to be with someone in Sweden. It's more going to affect the refugees that arrived. Yeah, it's more going to affect refugees and people that are seeking asylum in Sweden.
It'd be interesting to see how they do if the two-year-old children of immigrants could vote.
I would not give Maya a vote. She couldn't even decide what trousers to wear today. It took her 20 minutes. I got every single pair of trousers out and she's like, nej, jag vill inte byxor. It's like, okay, go to Dagis with no trousers on. I don't care. So she should not have the vote.
If indecisiveness about what you're going to wear is disqualifying you for a vote, then I'm getting worried, actually. I have those mornings most mornings.
Okay, so if we go back to our parties here, we just have the Greens left.
Yeah, so the Greens, on the topic of work migration, work permit migration, they've said that they're not entirely against raising the 13,000 krona salary threshold, but they want people that are here on a work permit to still be able to work part-time if they're studying or something. And they're against Arbetsmarknadsprövning, so they're against the labour market tests.
Yeah. So as James mentioned earlier, they were one of the parties that enacted this more liberal law back in 2008.
Yeah.
So they're still broadly in favour of maintaining that.
Yeah. And they are against Arbetsmarknadsprövning, which puts them with the Centre Party on that side of politics. But then you have the Social Democrats and Vänsterpartiet, who are in favour of it. And so we'll see how the cards fall.
I mean, it was interesting when I interviewed the Centre Party's vice deputy leader, Martin Ådahl, because the way he described what had happened in this mandate period is that the Centre Party single-handedly blocked bringing back a lot of the things we're talking about now. Like, the Social Democrats wanted to bring back Arbetsmarknadsprövning 4 years ago in the last migration law, but it was shot down. And wanted to bring back, and I don't know where the Melderitz stood in that discussion, but he obviously, because he's from the Centre Party, argued it was the Centre Party that blocked it. So I think when James is talking about what will happen after the election, I imagine the Centre Party will put up quite a tough fight against bringing back labour market testing and a high salary threshold.
Yeah, and I think you also have to think that just because a party is in one block, that doesn't necessarily mean that the Centre Party is going to always vote with, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean the parties are kind of tied to always voting with that block. If it's kind of policy issues, if it's not like big major laws, they can still cross the block lines. They can still, like, the
Centre
Party.
Unless
they're in government.
Unless they're in government.
Yeah. And you don't know if they're going to be in government. Yeah.
No, we don't. But there is a lot of talk now. There's a lot of speculation that the Centre Party is quite keen to go into government with the Social Democrats after the next election. So they would actually sit in a coalition government and Annie Lööf would be a minister in that government. And that would make it much harder for them to vote against the government, or make it almost impossible for them to vote against the government without bringing the government down. So you know, that's another factor perhaps to bring into this, yeah.
But yeah, it will test the Social Democrats' resolve on these work permit issues.
Certainly will. Yeah, but it will also test the Centre Party's resolve. They might decide that they can win other things from the other concessions from the Social Democrats on things like tax, because the Centre Party are much more in favour of lower tax rates than say the Social Democrats and the Venstre Party and Venstre Partiet, the Left Party, who tend to favour higher tax rates. So, you know, they might concede more on those sort of fiscal issues and immigration issues or on something else. So it's not easy to see how it'll pan out.
That's all for this week. Thank you as always for listening, and thank you to our regular panellists Becky Waterton, James Savage and Richard Orange, and our sound engineer Reese Edwards. We'll be back again next Saturday.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
With a new episode. Until then, take care. That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Reese Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.